The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in to the Husker 24/7 podcast. I am Mike Shaver, joined by Brian Christopherson here on Monday after yet another Nebraska football game that didn't go how anyone truly wanted, even though there was, you know, that brief moment of hope where it's like, is this a Saturday where it all just sort of comes together and Nebraska is staked to an early lead against a foe that always seems to beat them? And this is the time that they just finish a game on the field and there is no hiccup. No, it was not that on Saturday. There's plenty of hiccups. And who better to go through all of it than Brian Christopherson? And noticeably absent today because of too much partying after a game that will not be discussed on this podcast is Michael Brunts. You can find your Broncos talk somewhere else. We are moving on very quickly. Brian, how you doing here on Monday?
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that game on Sunday night. But I suppose we do have to talk about that game Saturday night. It was a fascinating game, and actually it was a pretty interesting press conference on Monday too, because it hit on three or four different topics of significance probably. But yeah, I'm doing well. I didn't answer your question. I got through that, and then I didn't even answer what you asked me. I'm doing pretty well. Health is all right.
Okay. Good. That's what we want to hear. I mean, we're heading into the Super Bowl week of our season, given all of the stuff that's going on this week alone. You know, we cram as many sporting events and as many things as possible and throw in my favorite holiday of the year on Thursday, just to, you know, balance it all out. So, no shortage of things going on here with Husker 24/7. And of course, we'll be talking about basketball on the basketball podcast. If you're not familiar, there's a Husker 24/7 Hoops cast. That'll be on Tuesday morning. We will dive into a thrilling win in Sioux Falls. But this one today is to discuss Nebraska's latest loss in Madison, Nebraska's latest overtime loss. Shout out us, Summer Overtime Podcast, to get the people prepared for what they saw yet again on Saturday night. Let's start at the ending, Brian. At any point did you think, when Nebraska walked out to midfield at the end of regulation, that they were going to win in overtime?
I gave it like a 45% chance they would win in overtime. You're talking about at the coin flip was my percentage?
They made the field goal. The game is over. We're going to overtime. Mm-hmm. You've now reset yourself. It's sudden death, essentially. Not really, I guess, alternating possessions, but still, I mean, in the terms of how Nebraska plays, it's basically sudden death. I was at like a 7% chance that they could win that game in overtime. Once they did not take the lead in regulation, just the way the game flow had gone, the fact I thought they were pretty lucky to get Wisconsin off the field as often as they did in the second half offensively without giving up an additional score. And I just didn't have a lot of confidence in their special teams, in their offensive play calling, all of it in overtime. And I was rewarded for my skepticism. But what did you see in that final drive, the final four plays, final four plays? What kind of stood out to you just kind of about Nebraska's game there and Nebraska's overtime possession offensively?
Well, start on the defense with that. It felt like they had I was 45% when the overtime began, and then after two plays, it was probably like up to 55%. You know, if you're needle switching after every play, you know, Nebraska has Wisconsin facing a third down and eight. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, if they can just get off the field right here, force a kick, who knows, maybe misses it, something like that. But at the least, it's only 3 points. Things are looking pretty good. What was unfortunate, just going through the whole overtime, was that third and eight, Mordecai had just all the time he wanted on that one. And it just felt bad from the snap, the whole play. Like, it seemed like, okay, nobody's getting home here. He's going to find someone. And sure enough, someone settled down and found a nice 9-yard catch. But then, you know, you got him again, like third and 10, and you're thinking, okay, hold him to three. And who knows, you know, you're feeling pretty good if you do that. I wondered if there should have been a tripping call on Braylon Allen.
Absolutely should have been a tripping call. It's just blatant. Unless we're pretending Braylon Allen is doing leg lifts in the middle of the field here, you know, during the game, just to kind of keep himself stretched out while he's on his ass. There's nothing athletically that would make sense for him to lift his leg in the air and make contact with Nick Hendricks there. There's not a single athletic reason beyond blatantly tripping him in the middle of the field in front of the official. Didn't cost Nebraska the game, but well, yet another call. Yet another call the Big Ten officiating crew has blown against Nebraska this year. I'll leave it at that.
It might have cost them the game. There were a lot of other things, but it was one of them. Because that was second and 10, and what a play by Henrich. I mean, he just steamrolled over Allen and should have drawn a flag, and that would have brought the ball back to the 29. That would have been a tough field goal, probably. Mm-hmm. Probably not a touchdown for Wisconsin on that possession, so it was a big call. But yeah, that whole sequence, I felt like the defense for, you know, 4 or 5 plays had the upper hand. And then there was that scramble on the third down by Mordecai. And then it's, of course, a 4th and 1 where Nebraska was close to the stop. If they get it there, you know, they probably win the game. So they had opportunities with their defense, which has been a strong suit all year. After Wisconsin scored, it was pretty bleak. And I should have started off, and I don't want to beat the dead horse. We can get it. We'll get into it because Rule talked about the clock management thing at the end of regulation.
Oh, we'll get into it. There's a reason I didn't want to start with it, though.
I know it's been beat to death already now. So I was kind of stewing about how Nebraska handled the last minute over, like in the corner, the whole overtime. I was like, what? Why did they not give themselves all their plays? So yeah, that was where my mind was as this is all happening. So then on offense, it just felt like all odds were against them. Then you're going into that. If people are familiar with Camp Randall Stadium, you're going into the bowl of the stadium, which is where all the students are. And they were pumping in music like right up until the snap. It was really loud and tough to operate. And I wasn't surprised that a false start popped up with all the noise and everything. And then they needed a good first down. Like, they needed that play to be one where you get like 6 yards and you're kind of like, okay, we're in business here. We're going to answer you. And when they lost the one or whatever on the option play, I was thinking like, this is just bad news. So it was just another disappointing offensive possession. It's amazing. I don't have the numbers in front of me. We did it on our overtime podcast in the summer. You know, they've gone backwards in like 6 or 7 overtimes on their offensive drives. And so it's become something that's incredible. That's baggage that we have that this staff doesn't, but certainly it was on Nebraska fans' mind as they watched that, you know, OT transpire. It just kind of felt like something we'd seen before.
Yeah. Well, we certainly have. With the offensive play calling, I guess the option there was such an interesting call to me because I don't know if what they were hoping to catch him in exactly. And then just how uncomfortable it looked when it was ran is a reminder that this isn't really the offense they want to be calling or running. And yet it's in a critical moment, your first down play in overtime, it's where they went. And I would love to, and obviously Marcus Satterfield will talk on Tuesday and we'll, you know, see what he has to say about it. But I would love to know what the rationale, like if it seems to me that it was like a, we think we're going to catch him in something here. And it just clearly did not work. The same with the you know, very different play, very different time of the game. It felt like Nebraska was very confident they were going to catch Wisconsin with that Jalen Lloyd reverse, and it just did not work. And the margin for Nebraska, Brian, is so thin all the time that it just seems like if something goes against them offensively, if they are off schedule, even to the slightest degree, a 1 yard loss on first down, it is such an uphill battle for them to get going. And so then, you know, I already, like I said, I didn't have a lot of confidence before. Wisconsin scores a touchdown, Nebraska loses a yard. And then at that point, it's just like, okay, you know, what's the plan here? What are you going to do? And then it just sort of, you know, falls apart at that point. So it feels predictable on some levels, but I don't understand. And it's not just like it's only Marcus Satterfield here. Nebraska's last handful of offensive coordinators and Scott Frost in overtime, it's just like, go forward with the football. Like, there's so many like horizontal plays, and Danny Langsdorf ran one of the worst in the era of which Nebraska never completed a halfback screen. They ran like a negative 7 yard one against Northwestern on like first or second down. Like, it's just I just do not understand. Like, I would think in overtime, you're calling the plays that you feel the most confident in, that you have run the most, your bread and butter, and that option with your third string quarterback that has barely practiced all year and probably has run very few of those just struck me as a bizarre decision. I have been largely defending of Marcus Satterfield given everything around him. That play call has no defense for me at all. It's not like you have Jamal Ward there.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you mostly. I mean, it's one of those calls where they must have thought it's in their back pocket. They hadn't run it a lot in that game or at all. I don't remember.
I don't think they had run an option at all to that.
So that's probably what, I mean, it's a little bit of a thinking, like they probably did think they're going to bust them on it. Like, it's going to be like, okay, they're expecting you're going to go with Emmett up the middle or whatever. And you take it outside and you get that pitch and you're hoping the guy turns a corner and like makes 10 yards or a house call or something like that. I don't know. I'd have to watch it back a few times. If there was any pass option off of it, I don't remember if there was. We were in the other corner of the end zone. But yeah, there are certain plays in football where it does take some cojones in a way to call them, because if they don't work, they're easy to like say, why the heck would you do that? And that's one of those plays. So I just felt like after Wisconsin scored, Nebraska did the right thing when they won the toss and took the ball second. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's what you always do unless you're Colorado, which doesn't know the overtime rules. And so they take the ball first. That was a needless jab, but I still remember that.
The fan base appreciates you.
Anyway, you take the ball second all the time. In this weird case, like it would have almost been advantageous to have the ball first, because you just had your offense on the field and they kind of had some stuff working, and you had Wisconsin won the toss. You would have got the ball first, but you would have been playing on the other end of the stadium, not as noisy. There would have been some factors that would have actually been beneficial to Nebraska. So it kind of worked against them in a way that they won the toss when it's all said and done. Easy to say after the fact, had Nebraska stopped them on third down on defense, you don't say that at all. But that's what we do 2 days later. We talk about things like that. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like by the time the offense got on the field, no matter what they called, you know how like on first drives of games in a tough environment, it's like always hard for the most part, like if the crowd's really into it, which this crowd wasn't, but they were at the end. It's tough to get anything going because the defense is so amped up. That's how it felt like to me when Nebraska's with that scenario that they were down 7 now, having to get anything done. It was going to be tough. So Purdy was going to have to make a throw at some point, and a receiver was going to have to make a great catch or something like that, I felt like, to move the chains. And we'll get to Purdy. I liked a lot about his game, but just in that moment, throws were a little off, and you have some young receivers trying to make really tough plays. And some of them, you know, it would have been, any of them would have been extraordinary catches or tough throws to make, because the odds were against him after the false start penalty.
Yeah, I will say, and you rewatched it and would have a better vantage point than my memory of watching it in the hotel bar, but the Jalen Lloyd one, It felt like he slightly mistimed his jump there. And if that ball was a little bit lower, I think that was a third down play. If that ball was a little bit lower and he times his jump a little bit better, I mean, he's there. I mean, he's a hell of an athlete. I mean, I am so in on Jalen Lloyd's development as a receiver right now and so excited about his future. And that, you know, that was one where when it was in the air and I saw him going up, I'm like, is this going to be like an all-time leaping catch here from a Nebraska receiver? And it was just so high, he could only really get one hand on it, just kind of deflected himself.
Yeah, he had a shot at it. I'm big on Jalen, too. He came into the post game. He was one of the players that talked. And this is hard. I mean, no one likes this because it's a loss, but you could tell he took it extremely hard that they had lost the game. And some people be like, well, isn't that obvious? Not always. I've seen guys, especially young players, who you just don't see the pain from a game like that. And you saw it from him. He's a guy who wants to be special and he wants the program to be special. And he was hard on himself for not making a really tough play in a tough moment. And that's the kind of thing you like. You can get places with players like that. And so if you want to have some optimism after all that, I do think they have some young guys on offense who are built that way. They're going to need to figure out QB and all that stuff. But yeah, there was a chance that, you know, that ball could have maybe been caught and you keep that thing going. So I just felt like the opportunity was really missed at the beginning, though, on defense. Like that's your strength of your team. And you had a few, you know, two or three plays where the game probably could have swung your way if you make it. And Wisconsin got all of them. You know, they batted 1,000 on it. And so there you go.
Yeah. Real quickly, let's get into the time management thing. We haven't talked about it a lot. Matt Rhule did speak about it, but we'll hold off on what Rhule had to talk about after the break, but just your thoughts on his explanation. Well, I guess he reiterated it. So let's just do it all right now. What he had to say, what you saw, what was out there, all of it. I know for me, his explanation rings a little hollow when you're concerned about the other team getting the ball and driving and kicking a field goal to win. I understand you're trying to do two things. You're trying to run the clock down enough that when you score, there's no chance for them to do anything. And yet at the same time, just like in the Maryland game, there's a part of me that wants him to step outside of like, oh no, what about the other team? And just like, what is best for my offense and my team in this moment right now? And I don't think if you truly think about it, I don't think that you can worry about what Wisconsin was going to do with their possession. There's too much what if of, oh, if they got the ball and there's 55 seconds or there's 37 seconds and they only needed to go 40 some yards or whatever it was. If they can do that and your defense gives it up, you deserve to lose. You didn't finish the game out as you wanted. I felt like they needed to be more aggressive there. I thought they had the momentum. I thought they needed to take a couple shots at it. I understand that they had just lost to Maryland in a similar fashion, but a very different set of circumstances. It just felt odd to me. And then the explanation of being worried about, well, if you leave too much time, they can go down and score. Okay. But at least give yourself a chance to win the damn game. Like, I don't know. He said he'd like the timeout at the 30-second mark. I feel like it should have been at the 40-second mark. I mean, enough was going to happen after that. And if Tanner Mordecai could beat you in 22 seconds down the field, needing to go 50 yards for your college kicker, just tip the cap and take the loss. But you've got to be more aggressive in that scenario. And I understand third-string quarterback, limited reps, all of it. Man, it just feels like Nebraska cannot decide if they're going to be conservative, if they're going to be aggressive. It's like Matt Rhule yet doesn't have a good feel for who his team is. And with all of the injuries, it's understandable. It just felt like a wasted opportunity.
Yeah. Emmett Johnson went down with 51 seconds left. So it would have been third and two there. And I agree with you. I would have taken the timeout with like 35 to 40 seconds if it were me. I'm not making the big bucks. That's what I would have done. And the reason why I would have done that is they were in a favorable down and distance setup of third and two. If it was like third down and six or seven, I would have more understood, like, if you wanted to milk the clock a little bit But they were in an advantageous spot to get the first down, which they did on the Chubba Purdy run of 6 yards to the 12. If you had like 30 to 35 seconds left after the Purdy first down at the 12, not only can you run all three plays, but you actually could run anything. You could have been conservative still, and you could have run Emmett Johnson and hoped he got 5 yards on first down, and then it opens up things at second and five at the 7 or whatever. So that's why I just felt like when you short yourself two opportunities to win it right then and there, it's disappointing to me. And so that's why I disagreed with it. I still do. I understand this. I think this is a staff that thinks through that stuff pretty thoroughly. And I just happen to really disagree with the one that decision they made this Saturday. Now, the 3rd and 7 pass against Maryland, I disagreed with that one too. And for that moment and that team and that quarterback who'd been on scout team all week. But that one is more understandable to me because 3rd and 7 is a natural passing down in a lot of cases. And I don't have a real problem with pushback on that they threw a pass there and it didn't work out. And you can't always go about resulting as rule says, like you still have to go with what you think is right in that moment. So I'm not one who's extremely down on what they did against Maryland. I was pretty down on what they did in the last minute against Wisconsin. Cause I just, yeah, like I say, you just gave up two opportunities. Also when there was only 13 seconds left and it was 1st and 10 at the 12, Wisconsin knows you have to throw the ball, you know, at that point into the end zone. And so it makes it very easy for them defensively. If you have 30 to 35 seconds left, yep, they have a lot to think about. And you know, as much football as you watch, like one of the hardest spots on the field is to score between like the 11 and the 15. And that's where you need a couple downs usually because
and
you need
a couple
that
dudes. You need guys. And yeah, Nebraska did not have that necessarily on the field. So you have to admit that.
Yes. But that's where if you had the extra downs, you have the opportunity on 1st or 2nd down to move the ball forward a little bit where you're more in that like 5 to 6 yard area where, you know, then anything can happen if you have the right play and all that. So, yeah, I wrote about it after the game. And at this point, it what's done is done and it's all been said. And he laid it out and he told the team he wishes he had one more play than they ran. I wish they had two more plays than they ran, but that the way it worked out is what it is. And there's no guarantee they would have scored a touchdown. I just felt like, I thought they had Wisconsin on their heels a little bit after the Purdy scramble and all that. And it just kind of let them off, you know, they had the advantage with the clock. And as a football fan, don't you always think like when you're watching the Vikings, like there are certain times where you're like, I hope the team doesn't do this, or I hope they don't go for it here. And you're kind of hoping they do something, you know, go. And, that was a moment where what Nebraska did, if I'm a Wisconsin fan or whatever, I'm saying, thank you. You know, like, thanks for that. Like, thanks for the assist there. So that's what I think about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're putting it in the context of the Vikings, there's a lot of thoughts I have that are probably going to be different than the conventional process, because whatever Minnesota tries to do tends to go opposite and pear-shaped. It's kind of, you know, like I watched the same game on Sunday and Saturday in some ways, but we'll spare the people that, and instead we'll give the people a short time out here. When we come back, we'll get into more thoughts from Matt Rhule, including is there going to be some staff changes, and not necessarily because he's moving on from somebody, but could Tony White have opportunities ahead in his future? Matt Rhule had thoughts on that. Of course, you know, we can't just rehash Wisconsin. Iowa's coming as well. What did Matt Rhule have to say about the game coming up on Friday? All of that and more when we return here on the Husker 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, so I mentioned Tony White is appearing on several several hot lists for coaches, you know, that for opportunities. San Diego State is open. Syracuse is open. UCLA could be open. A number of positions are expected to open up at some point. And Tony White is going to be a name that is going to be on these. He had a fantastic year here so far with Nebraska. He's, a Broyles candidate as well for top assistant coordinator in the country. And so there's a lot of notoriety and people are interested. And, you know, even if it's not necessarily a head coaching job, whoever takes the UCLA job might look at what Tony White did in his 1 year at the Big Ten and try to bring him back to his alma mater to be the defensive coordinator there, because UCLA is joining the Big Ten. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. What did Matt Rhule have to say about this speculation? Because it's sort of unique, Brian. I can't remember, you know, a head coach talking about his coordinators and inviting people to interview him. Granted, Nebraska hasn't had a lot of coordinators that have probably deserved head coaching opportunities either in recent years.
Yeah. And the, and as much as we disagreed with their clock management at the end of it, and I'll get to that answer, but I actually believe in the staff quite a bit. And Rhule, I think in situations like this, one thing I really appreciate about him, you can talk about it and he will have really good answers. And he's not like one of those head coaches that's like, oh, let's put this in the corner. You know, like, for instance, when the clock management thing came up, it was, you know, generally kind of asked about handling those situations. And he said, we're talking about how I should have taken a timeout earlier, right? You know, like he kind of gets right to the middle of it. And so like on this Tony White thing, it's the same way. It's like, yeah, it's out there. Why would, you know, here you go. He deserves it. If he gets a head coaching opportunity, basically his advice to his guys though is, you know, don't jump at the wrong job, you know, make sure the commitment meets the expectations. You know, there's two or three things you got to check off to make sure that's the right job for you. Because if you're as gifted as I think Tony White is, and I think Matt Rhule thinks he is, there are going to continue to be opportunities. And so it's got to be the right opportunity. And, you know, don't just jump into the deep end of the pool just to do it. And so he wants his guys to have success. He wants them to be in Nebraska. Obviously, he'd love Tony White to be his DC next year. But if one of your guys gets a chance to be a head coaching job and there's only 133 of them or whatever in FBS, you know, that's a big honor. And you understand why a guy is interested if that happens. So I like how supportive he is of his guys succeeding in that way. He also said, and this is true, if you look at his track record, he's always had good defenses and he expects to have a good defense basically no matter who's coaching. And he expects Tony White's going to have a really good defense next year if he's at Nebraska, and he'll have opportunities that come with it. So Tony White's in a win-win situation right now. I mean, if you look at this roster, yes, they could lose like Ty Robinson if he decides to go to the NFL, and Quentin Newsome and Reimer are gone. But I was just like thinking the other day about like, I wrote it today, like about Marquise Buford's back, you know, and then you think about, oh, Deshaun Singleton's going to be next to him and Isaac Gifford, you know, and all that. Like, it looks pretty good as you go through and think about the young D line and all that stuff. Tony White, as you know, is a sharp dude and is going to see all that and know that he doesn't have to jump just to jump. And so I would fully expect it would have to be a really good job for him to do it, because he's got something pretty good working right now. And I think they can actually build on what they've done this year, even though the schedule is going to be harder next season.
Yeah. And the other thing with the two places that he's been at, in San Diego State and Syracuse, you know, you're also in this time in college football where if you go to San Diego State, what does it look like in a few years as we continue to see the divide between the Group of Five and the Power Five, and even within the Power Five, you know, those are the conferences and everything else. So what is the real opportunity at San Diego State? And does that speak enough to Tony White? And then, of course, at Syracuse, similar thing. They're in a better spot in the ACC. But this is, I think, with the heart of what Matt Rhule was really saying. That job is going to probably be there for Tony White in another, you know, time in his life if he really wants it. I also feel like there's a reason he left Syracuse to come to Nebraska. I don't know that, you know, I just don't know that that's going to be the fit. Like, I don't know that that one's going to make the most sense for Tony White. I think I understand San Diego State a lot more. He invested a ton of his time, and I think he really feels like he wouldn't be here today, Nebraska's defensive coordinator, if it wasn't for his time in San Diego with Rocky Long and really kind of rising the ranks as a coach there. I mean, he kind of did everything. If you look at his career, that's where he grew up as a coach. And I think he has a lot of respect for that place, but Nebraska can certainly make anything interesting financially. And he has to ultimately decide, you know, is San Diego State the start to the next jumping off point? Can he build something that had been sustainable in the past? Can he build that up again? And what does that look like for him? And so I think those are going to be really, really interesting conversations. And Brian, you've talked with Tony a lot. I've talked with Tony. I mean, he is a very thorough individual. I think he is going to take a lot of time with this. And I'm very curious where this decision ultimately ends up. But right now, I feel like he's going to end up as Nebraska's defensive coordinator again in 2024. I just don't think he's going to leave after 1 year. I could be wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you say, there's certain jobs where you could become the head coach and not make as much money as you make as the defensive coordinator at Nebraska, or as much as they could pay him. So, and I do think he really likes Nebraska, the people here, and he's beloved right now. I mean, he's very popular. It's not, I mean, anywhere he goes, he's got to get pretty good treatment, I would think, because there's one thing most people agree on. It's like, I like Tony White. Like, everybody's sort of in on that. So it's not a place where you're exactly looking to leave when everybody's kind of patting you on the back, maybe.
Let's hit on a couple other topics and see what Rhule had to say. Did we get into special teams much on Monday?
You know what? We didn't. We got into a lot of like big picture and senior day talk. There wasn't a lot of special teams conversation, and that could be reserved for Wednesday. You know, as there's going to be another availability with him. But that was disappointing. I mean, there was a net of 12 and a net of 19 in that game from Nebraska's end. And, you know, I don't know if Buscini's trying to get too fine with it this year, or what exactly's gone wrong there.
The numbers are pretty staggering for
most. Yeah, they are. Because, I mean, if you go back to his days, kicking a ball is kicking a ball, you know, whatever your level, and you go back to his Montana days, I mean, he was 46 yards, like, punt and stuff like that. So, I don't know what's happened. At halftime, I was watching him, and he was kind of scuffling a bit at halftime. Like, they just weren't coming off his foot well. The last one did. He really boomed the last one. I thought, well, maybe that'll pick him up. But I like Brian a lot, so I hope he has a good game, you know, against Iowa, because he has to. I mean, Iowa's so good at that. Like, you can't give up a 10
also to 50. Staggering. Go look at their numbers. No one's punted more, and no one has punted better. And it's not even really close. Like, it's incredible. Like, with their, you could go to the conference website and look at their stats for punting, Brian. And it's just, you know, like, all you can do is laugh, because it's just like, they clearly have emphasized this to the point that they view it as a weapon, and they really do weaponize it against every one of their opponents.
I bet if they wouldn't have had a great punter like the last 3 to 4 years, I bet they would have lost 2 or 3 more games a season.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. they're so good at it. They gain 10 yards of field position per exchange. More than that, they're experts, not just the punter, but their gunners and everybody involved at downing it at the 2-yard line, you know, and then their defense is set up and eventually they make a play on defense where they get that turnover and it's basically a free score for them. And they haven't done that quite as much this year. Defensively, they're great defensively this year, but they haven't maybe scored as much as they did in that ridiculous stretch last season. But at some point, you got to tip your hat. You can make fun of the offense all you want, but you say with those two phases of the game, they work in complement each other in such a way you got to admire it. And that's where Nebraska, I mean, odds are against them going into it, looking at the numbers, but they've got to step up and have a special game from their punter, from their gunners, from everybody involved, and kind of surprise everybody and flip the script there on one that people won't expect it to flip on.
Yeah. All right. So he did get into the senior stuff. What kind of stood out from what he was saying? Obviously, we're closing in. Still got 2 more years left of could walk, could not walk.
Yeah.
Could walk and could come back. Could walk and could never come back. So could walk and could portal. Yeah, there's still 2 more years of it out there. What did Matt Rhule have to say on it?
Well, there's 24 guys who are walking, and they weren't named off. Yeah, I didn't see the notes. Maybe they are in there. I'll have to take a look. But I think they only have 11 seniors technically. So that tells you that there's some guys who are juniors, or there's also sometimes guys who are a little lower down, who are maybe, you know, you wonder if they're just done with football or they're thinking about like an FCS venture or something like that. You always see a couple of those. So there's 24 guys walking. He said that on Sunday, of course, everybody's pretty down. It's a late game. You lose that fashion. You can imagine how guys feel. But he had several guys come into his office and say, I'm running it back next year. Like, I want to do this next year. Now, he didn't say who they were, but he really believes, and this kind of connects to this conversation, I don't think he thinks they're going to have a ton of portal movement, like guys just jumping and wanting to go over here and over there. So that's interesting to me. I think the guys you're obviously looking for are like Ty Robinson. You know, he's played 5 years of football. He's a junior, and I feel like he's put enough on film that he's going to get drafted. And now this is where people
really well Saturday too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
People always say this though, Schaefer, like when you say like, the first response is there's always somebody like, well, he could come back and be a first or second round draft pick. That's like always, you know, or whatever. That can be true. I'm not debating that, but I think people have to look at it through a different lens than they used to. He's been in college for 5 years. Some of these guys, there's just that season where it's time to turn, you know, like it's time to move on. And I'm not saying that's always the case. Like people give Garrett Nelson crap maybe because he came out early and he didn't get drafted. Well, he'd given a lot to the program over time. And sometimes it's that moment where I'm going to go see if I can make it or not, you know, and whether I do or not, I got to get to the next stage of my life. So everybody's got a very personal decision to make with that. I just think if a guy has played college ball for 4 or 5 years, we shouldn't immediately drive to the, oh, if he would have come back, he could have done this and that. I have seen a couple of cases, and I'm not going to name them, where it hasn't worked out quite as you'd hope when guys have left early. But if Ty Robinson is going to get drafted, I can see where somebody doesn't want to put more miles on their body. And if it's a 4th or 5th round pick or whatever it is, he would say, hey, let's go get on a team, get to camp, and just see what I can do at that level. It's time. So you got to have some respect for those sort of decisions. And all the ball, I should add, I don't know what Ty Robinson's doing. I'm just using him as an example because he seems like the obvious, like,
pretty
could he go guy.
One too.
Yeah. So
in the same case.
Yep. So that'll be interesting if which of those type of guys walk. And also, they could change their mind. It doesn't mean they're necessarily not coming back. People have to remember that.
Yeah. One thing to note, they're going to have at least some people leave because if they're going to take the signing class that they have currently, and if they're going to go into the portal and add a few pieces, they got to have some room, and they can't have that many NIL scholarships, I'm assuming. So they're going to have to come up with some guys are certainly going to be on their way out. And I don't know that it's going to be really hard to sit through and look at the roster and be like, all right, well, this guy hasn't really done much or whatever. But there's always people that move on, and there's always off-season medical red shirts, and there's always different things that happen, and they'll get to the number they need to. But there certainly will have to be some departures besides just exhausting of eligibility for Nebraska to be able to bring in the class that it already has committed, let alone the ones that they want to continue to add. Because, oh, by the way, they're going to be bringing in some official visitors on Friday for the weekend, and they're going to have some visitors coming in December and the portal and everything else. So certainly going to have to look at that as well. Any other things you want to touch on that Matt Rhule has spoke about on Monday?
I think we hit a lot of the big ones. I'm about to write this after we're done here.
Ooh, a little preview. Depending on how quickly I put this up.
Might not be a preview. It might be just like it's on the site. Not because you're slow. It's
thank you.
It's not because you're slow. It's because I'm seriously going to write it, and my goal is to be done with it within like an hour. So,
So that's like I'm going to turn over the hourglass here, and we're going to race, Brian.
We could do that. Anyway, this may or may not be on the site when you hear this. But I asked him a question. You know, after the Illinois game, he referenced a Pat Riley quote or a Pat Riley phrase from back in the day about the innocent climb. And it's sort of that that time when you're building something and you got to appreciate the steps along the way, even though there's heartbreak and there's lessons learned and stuff that's happened the last 3 weeks and all that. And he said, you have to appreciate that. That's what he said after the Illinois game. So I asked him if, you know, taking that phrase and looking at his team, if he believes they've sort of bought into that and see, like, even though there's been three tough weeks, like you can see, like, this is developing. And that's where he got into a lot of guys like really being on board and even parents with how this is going. And he said, if you cut open, you know, you cut it open, like you know, looked inside this program, he said it's extremely healthy. And he just truly believes it's really a together operation, that they want to build it from high school type recruits. They want to develop guys, and guys see that. And there's optimism about that. He said, at the same time, I'm angry about the record. Two things can be true at once. I believe it's a healthy program. I'm angry about being 5-6. They probably think they should be at least, you know, 7-4, something like that. So, I thought that was interesting and I don't want to paraphrase it all cause I'll mess it up. So the whole quote will be in that story, but, just the way that they're operating, I get that you have to sometimes spin it positive, but I do think they believe in their plan and they believe the players believe in their plan. And that encourages them even after the last 48 hours are probably kind of tough around there, you know, after a game like that. But you know what this game means Friday, Schaefer. If this is one of those where you end up 5-7, you lost all of them in November, it's going to be kind of bleak with fans and media and stuff like that. It's just going to be the way it is. Another year without a bowl. If they win and beat Iowa for a second straight year, and on Saturday morning we're talking about where are they going to go, some of the last few weeks are kind of going to go by the wayside a little bit. Like they will actually. I mean, so that's what's at stake on Friday. That's how big this game is. You don't want to say it's all or nothing because it's the 24 is going to come up no matter what happens Friday, and they're going to be optimistic they can win more games and get it going. But for the like narrative and the stuff that will be in the air in this state for the whole off season, there's a lot that matters with Friday's game and helping you out in that regard.
Yeah. I don't know that I can't speak, obviously, for the fan base, so often I try to. I don't know that there's been a lot of belief that Nebraska hasn't been largely bought into what they've been building or what they've been doing. I think the feeling, at least the feeling I've had, Brian, the last really kind of going into the month of November, when you look at the opponents Nebraska's playing, they caught three straight teams that were reeling. Mm-hmm. They caught three straight teams that it looked like they had issues, you know, whether it was in the locker room, whether it was big picture with who their next coach was going to be, whether it was Maryland giving away the start of the season when you were 5-0 to all of a sudden you're looking dead in the face at going 5-5 with Michigan, you know, and whoever they have to finish up. I think it's Rutgers to finish up. And you had Michigan State where you didn't seem like they had a lot to play for. And you have Wisconsin where the quotes coming out of there after they lost to Northwestern were about dissension and guys needing to pull together in the locker room. Nebraska caught three reeling programs where I would feel like their culture was better.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to win those games. And I don't know what to do with that to a degree, because a lot of it sort of comes back to, there's a part of me that feels like even against a schedule that it's been pretty bad, in some ways, Nebraska has overachieved to even be where they're at 5-6, given the amount of injuries and how much they've sort of had to transition. I mean, you look at the staggering amount of turnovers and possessions given away, even in some of those wins that they were able to come out on top of it. It is a very odd team. Like this, it feels like they're somehow exactly in the record that they should have, while also probably should be better, but theoretically could have been a lot worse. I don't know if any of that makes any sense, but this is among the stranger teams I think that we have ever covered, because it's really hard to get a feel for a team that has kind of been like put together with duct tape and some chewing gum and some pocket lint. And that's your starting offensive line at times. And then your quarterback is just like some found money in your pocket, but sometimes there's a hole in that pocket. You know, like it's just those are some weird examples, but they're a strange team. And it does seem like what is being built is bigger than just the wins and losses. But that does nothing for the people that are just waiting to see Nebraska get over the hump and they haven't done it. And so it's such an odd, you know, to try to slice this thing and discuss it without really getting into the wins and losses. It's very difficult to really determine things. But I don't know about you. It feels like Nebraska's grown a lot, and yet they're in the same spot where they've been for years. I just don't know what to do with that.
I know what you're saying. I mean, you could separate conversations. Like you could say, okay, let's just say talk about the turnover situation and the injuries on offense. And if you kept it right there, you'd think, oh, they're minus 15 and these guys were out. And this is what you did at QB all year. Like if you're told this in August, you'd be like, well, were they 2-10, 3-9? So there's that part. And then there's the part where we've actually watched these games where Nebraska, despite some of that, has been on the doorstep where it feels like it's right there. Grab it. Like Minnesota, you could go back to the opener. Nebraska was better than Minnesota that night for most of the game. They really were like in the trenches and in a lot of parts, and they lost. And, turnover is a big part of it, but that was one of those games where it felt like it was in their hand and then it was lost. Maryland was not as much in hand as we think about it because they were on the doorstep, but Maryland was also on the doorstep a couple times and fumbled. But nonetheless, it felt like a game that was there to be had wasn't. And then obviously the opportunity in East Lansing with the program that's going through some tough times, you feel like you let one go there. So it is weird. You could like sit, you could explain it in one way and say, yeah, they should be 3-9. You could explain it another way and say they should be playing for the division title on Friday, no questions asked. And the truth and the record sits right in the middle. And maybe that's where it's supposed to be, I guess. Yeah. Schedules are going to get harder, I think, than this one. I think it was favorable for them to figure things out on the fly. But it is a complicated discussion because of some of the injuries on offense and everything that's happened. So it's a weird year. We'll have a lot of time to go back and examine every part of it. I do think, you know, I always thought like if you can get to 6 wins and you have those practices in December and we're talking about where they're going, people say, all right, there's the floor that to stand on. Let's see where they can go from there. And so that opportunity is still out there. And you know, this is going to be a close game Friday. It will be. I'd be surprised if one team wins by more than 4 points, honestly. It just feels like a game that'll go down to the wire. And if Nebraska pulls that thing off, I know these people in this state, they're going to be kind of excited again. They're going to be like, all right, I was down on you guys the last couple of weeks, but you kind of pulled me back in, you know, a little bit. So that's the opportunity before them, but they got to go take it. And maybe Chubb is the guy this week. We'll see again. We didn't talk about him really, but we can hit that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you should give your thoughts on him. I did on the Sunday side session, so this floor is all yours.
Well, I thought he was pretty good. Like even in the part where Nebraska was stagnant and that wasn't really going on offense, it wasn't Chubb's deal necessarily. And you know, at the end he had to force some tough throws and he put the ball around the area. And I just thought when he went back to throw the ball, I know there were some short passes set up to give him opportunity for success to Billy Kemp, and that was wise. But I also thought when he was asked to throw it downfield, it was one of the first times or only times all year where I wasn't like, I assume something bad is going to happen here. And I'm not trying to be snarky to other guys, because that's just the way I felt. And it's just being honest. And on Saturday night, maybe it was because they just started so well and he just looked so comfortable in his skin out there. But I just thought like, yeah, he looks like he belongs. And he did not a year ago. And I think you'd be the first to say, and I know I would for myself, I kind of thought Chuba from last year was Chuba. Like, yep. That was I don't do that a lot, but I didn't really have a lot of confidence. Like, you know, people are saying, they should start him against Wisconsin. I was like, yeah, I guess, you know, but I thought, I'm not saying he changed it where he should be like the starter in 24 or not. It's just all said and done, but he changed the narrative about himself. He definitely did, where you at least, you know, people were talking over him in the QB conversation, and now they're not going to. Well, we'll see what happens Friday and if he gets the call and plays well. But if he can back up what he did in some respects against a very tough defense and just play composed and smart football, it'll go a long way for him and like how people are talking about him throughout the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I said in the Sunday side session, and I highly recommend people checking that out, of course, but I basically acknowledged I was completely wrong on Chuba for 2023. I did not want to watch him at all. I mean, he put together some of the worst quarterback play, and it wasn't just him. I mean, the offense in general was atrocious. The approach was atrocious. The line play was atrocious, et cetera. But I just didn't think he had it in him, to be honest. And then, of course, that opening drive, you have the 55-yard touchdown, which, by the way, this guy was going to go get groin surgery. I mean, he was out there sprinting past the entire Wisconsin defense, you know. So that in itself was just sort of remarkable. And then he threw passes that were in the neighborhood of where they needed to be. Some were completely on time. You know, sometimes they're a little behind, a little ahead, whatever. It's going to happen. He gave you a chance to win, and he played well enough for Nebraska to win. They just don't have that many pieces that they can just go run away and hide. And I understand that to a degree. But I, you know, fully admitted on that podcast, I'll fully admit on this podcast, I was completely wrong. I mean, I just didn't think he had that game in him that he did on Saturday. And, you know, I don't want to use the Iowa game as it's going to be any sort of more barometer either, but I hope that it wasn't a mirage. I hope that he's able to follow up on the Wisconsin game and he comes out with confidence and they've got a bit of a game plan to attack where they can attack. And he has an opportunity to kind of be a hero, because, you know, for a while, it certainly looked like he had just kind of rode in on his horse and, you know, saved the town and was going to be, you know, it was going to be the hero. And probably should have been. They just couldn't get the job done in Madison, and we'll see if he's able to in Lincoln. And it opens up a really interesting conversation about who could be back for Nebraska in terms of what expects to be a pretty wide open 2024 spring quarterback competition. But I'll say this, I certainly have a lot more confidence about the idea of Chuba Purdy being your backup quarterback in 2024 or being a part of this whole thing than I did 2 weeks ago, where it was like, yeah, that's one of the guys I can't imagine seeing in this program in 2024. That doesn't feel that way at all, Brian, for me right now, just two games later with what he's done. And again, that's me saying I was dead wrong.
You're an idiot.
Thank you.
Before
we go here, I watched Saturday's game. It was a unique experience for me, and this rarely ever happens because most of the time I try to be at home, not around anybody else, so I can just kind of lock in on the game, focus, whatever. I had a bunch of friends that went up to Sioux Falls to watch the basketball game. I have some friends already in Sioux Falls. Went to a bar called Stubby's. This place, and it wasn't just the group of friends that I had there. Like, there was a lot of Nebraska fans that just descended upon this bar. And there's about 6 to 7 locals that would have just been in there on Saturday night anyways. And their reaction to, like, the first 14 points being scored in that game and the way that the Nebraska fans in that bar were just going absolutely bananas was the face of bewilderment from some of these people is just not an expression I'm going to forget. And it just kind of reminds you of, like, fans are just itching for this opportunity to get to feel good. And they just keep getting teased over and over and over. And, you know, Saturday was a great opportunity for that. Like I said, I don't, you know, at home games, I'm in the press box. Away games, I'm usually just at my house and it's just me and Slider hiding because he hears footballs on TV, and Sunday PTSD from Vikings games has him, you know, pretty concerned when he can tell that there's live sports going on. So it's a unique setup for me to be able to see that, but it just reminded me of, you know, how much fun this could be if Nebraska could ever just kind of put together some wins and stay out of their own way. So shout out to Stubby's and Sioux Falls for handling a much larger crowd on Saturday than they ever bargained for. They had to call in backups. There were, like, people showing up, like, they're like, yeah, I was out at a bar myself and now I'm here to work.
That's interesting. That's his fan base right now. There's some good stuff happening in Husker athletics too.
It's a big week.
Soccer and volleyball winning the Big Ten outright, and what they could do in December, and that's been a fun story all year. And then you got men's basketball is giving reasons to hope early on, which we'll get to in another podcast. So, if football, I think at this moment, cash in six somehow, some way Friday. These people have been dying for it for 3 weeks, and hopefully those fans that are left over at Stubby's on Friday, Black Friday, get something to cheer about.
Yeah. All right. Well, be sure to check out all the coverage we have at Husker 24/7. Plenty of coverage from Brunson, BC, from the presser today with Matt Rhule. Of course, there will be coordinators on Tuesday, Rhule again on Wednesday. We'll have all of that. We have high school championships going on. There are high school state finals being played here in Memorial Stadium. And so, of course, we'll have coverage of that. The Class A title is on Tuesday. Class B plays Monday night. You have a handful of recruits playing on Tuesday in the Class A game. You got Caleb Benning and Ashton Murphy from Elkhorn South, Caleb Benning from Westside. Those are your commits in terms of scholarship guys. Preston Okafor is a walk-on commit. Of course, you have Christian Jones, and you have Keenan Cotton. And there's also Rezacks. I mean, the West Side's just loaded. So if you haven't seen them all year, take the opportunity, throw it on. They're pretty heavy favorite in this Class A title game, but we'll see if the Elkhorn Storm can give them a Elkhorn South Storm can give them a battle here on Tuesday. And of course, if you miss it, I'll have some coverage for you here at Husker 24/7 as well. For Brian Christofferson, I'm Mike Shaver. We're Husker 24/7. We'll have more content throughout the week.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.